You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
The Vancouver and District Labour Council, the VDLC, has been working with the local Filipino community to raise awareness about the human rights situation in the Philippines. To that end, the VDLC sent a delegation on a solidarity and human rights fact-finding tour in December of last year. VDLC President Bill Saunders was part of that tour, and he joins us on the phone now. Hello, Bill.
Good morning.
Now, what was your overall impression when you first arrived in the Philippines?
Well, we were a bit overwhelmed, actually, because you land in Manila, and as you know, Manila is a city of, I don't know, tens of millions of people or so. And it also is very, very dense, very crowded. The air quality is exceptionally poor, and everybody suffered from a kind of a respiratory reaction to the air quality immediately. And we were told that that was very common for new arrivals in the country.
Where did you visit on your trip?
Well, we went to several places. Actually, we had a kind of a tour that touched on a lot of conditions that we were interested in. So, for example, we first met with a workers' central called the Makabayan. It's like the BC Federation of Labor for that region, although there are seven federations like that. So it's like, you know, it's not a united labor movement, but this group we were working with, they have the teachers' union ASSERT in their ranks and the communication workers of the Philippines, plus an industrial union and agricultural union inside the union central. So we went to their union office, and we were briefed by them a little bit about general conditions, you know, what's the labor law, what's the labor code, et cetera. And then through them, because they're part of this coalition group called KPD, which is organizing in the broader community, not just union certifications, but broader organization, we met with a women's organization, farmers group, what they call fisher folk, which are, you know, fisher people. A youth group, YND, et cetera. And then they lined up with for us a number of visits. So, for example, in Manila, we visited with a new teacher certification in a suburb of Manila called Marikina City. There's about 1,100 teachers there that have just been newly unionized. And they wanted us to visit there very, very badly because there's been some severe repression of the teachers who were newly unionized. For example, just after the union drive succeeded and, you know, they were in collective bargaining, the military actually moved military vehicles, including tanks, into Marikina City and parked them just outside there's seven schools. They parked them outside the schools, and then they proceeded to conduct anti-terrorism training for the people in the neighborhood inside the school. And, of course, the implication was that, you know, somehow or other, the terrorists had just shown up, i.e. the union. And it was a very, very bad time for the teachers, and in the sense that the parents were questioning what was going on in their school, etc. And they were really, it was probably going to break the union, I think, in the sense that the members were having a difficult time dealing with this, just being new union members. But they were able to get their principals on side. The principals didn't like the fact that troops were inside the schools either, and they complained to the mayor, and the mayor took a stand and asked the governor to withdraw the troops, and the governor did.
How dangerous is it in the Philippines to be an organizer, a union organizer?
Well, it's got the reputation now, or it's, you know, it's climbed up the scale. It's considered the second most dangerous place after Colombia, of course. Colombia murders more trade unionists than any other country. I think it's up to about 75 or 76 this year alone in Colombia. But they've had 70 trade union leaders killed in the last 2 years. The group we met with, for example, the teachers, there's been 10 teachers murdered. Teachers are a particular target because of their education and standing in the community, right? And there's been nobody ever charged for any of these murders.
What is the nature, the level of the poverty that people are facing there?
That was the thing that I think struck our delegation the most. You know, we talked about trade union organizing and the way the rules were structured against unionization, etc. But when we were taken out by the poverty group called LUPA, League for Urban Poverty Action, They took us to some of the poorest slums in Manila, places that you would never normally get in. You wouldn't last 10 minutes inside. It was kind of like a walled enclosure. It was built on a landfill site, basically a garbage dump on the harbor. 70,000 people live there. It's the most grinding poverty that you could possibly imagine. People are living, it's a rabbit warren of little streets with a sewer that runs down the center of the street. There's no running water. There's a little bit of electricity, you know, very iffy. And kids don't go to school. There are no services. There's no health care. There's no schools. It's bad.
And are those people working?
They don't have what you would think of as a job. They describe it as livelihood. And livelihood means you do whatever you can to earn money to feed your family. So for in the case of Tondo, which was one of these poor subs, we visited two, Tondo and Baseco. In Tondo, one of the industries that that community was running, because it's a bit organized now, right, with they've got a residence committee and stuff, was they peel garlic for restaurants. And kids do it, women do it, everybody does it. That's not working outside or trying to get a livelihood outside. All day long they do nothing but peel garlic and put them into 1 kilo packages and take them around, sell them to restaurants who don't want to shuck their own garlic.
And are people coming in from the countryside into Manila and ending up in that slum? Is that how it works?
It's like that all over the world. If you travel anywhere, you'll see that urbanization is really taking over, and at the expense of the the farmers and peasants in the countryside. So yes. These residents are basically illegal residents, the same as Venezuela has the favelas and Rio de Janeiro, etc. There's no real legal housing for them, so they just basically throw up a shack wherever they can. In this case, they put it on the dump. In other places, it's the other place we visited, it's on a piece of land that regularly floods. It floods three times a year, so they have to deal with that. But they were able to get housing. They can't rent housing. It's just not possible. They don't have any real income. And, the statistics, just the government statistics, are enough to make you cry. 34% of the population of the Philippines, 80 million people, suffer from malnutrition. So, they are unable to feed or house themselves properly.
You mentioned a residents committee who are doing some organizing in the slum. What kinds of things are they organizing?
They did the committee we were in. First of all, we were able to enter that committee because that place because they are organized and they allowed us in. We thought this was going to be viewed by them, negatively, in the sense of here comes some people from the West on a poverty tour kind of thing, right? But they actually saw it very positive. They were very interested that we were taking an interest in wanting to see what their problems were and to listen to them. And they do have a committee there. It's 90% women that have organized this community. And they've done basic things like constructed a daycare, for example, so some basic education can be done with kids, like just reading, teaching them the numbers and reading, because they're not getting any education at all. And that obviously affects the whole rest of their lives. They ran a hose about 1.5 kilometers to get running water into the community so that people could fill up containers. And there's a line up there all day long of people just doing nothing but filling up water containers, but it saves them from having to buy bottled water. Can you imagine the poorest people in the world have to buy bottled water? It's really astounding that how that works. But the running that hose saved that. They can fill it up from basically a safe water supply system. And it's like, working on crime. Crime's a problem there, and there had to be some sort of, the police never go in there. There are no services. So all of the services that you'd think, like helping sick people, child abuse or whatever else is going on in your community, somebody has to deal with it if you do have a community, and that's what these residence groups do.
Now, you talked about the kind of repression that union organizers face when they try to do something about the situations that they face in their workplaces. Are there other structural factors within the Philippines that make organizing difficult, aside from the direct repression?
Well, for example, just with the labor movement, which is where I'm most familiar and I can understand how things are done, they have actually not too bad a labor code, but it structurally it works against them in a couple of very, very serious ways. Number one is that you can only organize a union certification, but by the employer. So, for example, one union can't organize a whole bunch of different places that are all in the same area, you know, like transportation, for example. If the transportation is freightways, then that's the only union certification you can get, freightways like that, and you can't combine them, etc. So as a result, the trade union movement in the Philippines is very fractured. There's 7 union centrals. There's more than 3,200 unions. And a lot of them, and for example, you can't organize in the public sector. They can only have an association that advises. They can't be a real union. And then you have professional organizations on top of that. So tremendous structural problems created. Fractionalization is a real problem for the trade union movement in order to deal with, getting some critical mass. There's 2 million union members in the Philippines, but they are really, really divided up. So that's one of the problems. The other problem is that they don't have a labor board or anything. They do have courts. So in order for you to process a grievance, for example, you have to have a lawyer who can go to court and file a court case. Now, if you can imagine, poor people can't do this at all. I mean, the idea of paying a lawyer to try to get them some rights is just, doesn't even figure in the equation at all. So the unions definitely have lawyers, and that's one of their big advantages, that they are able to employ lawyers. And I talked to one of the lawyers that worked for Macabayan. She was an incredible woman. She really was a great person. And she told me that she files court cases day and night, and she wins 90% of them. But the unfortunate part is she wins them 6 months after the fact, and a lot of times that's too late for it to have any real effect.
Now, here in Canada, we are aware of the women who come to the Philippines as part of Canada's live-in care program. I understand that there are a lot of workers leaving the Philippines all the time, foreign workers going to other countries. What has that done to the economy there?
Well, it's transformed it, because the Philippines are suffering from globalization. You know what globalization has done, and in the Philippines, it's destroyed any of their basic industries that they had that provided employment in the Philippines. Those are pretty much gone in favor of export commodities, etc. And the government has reoriented itself now so that the major economic activity in the Philippines is sending workers overseas. There's between 4 and 6 million workers, Filipino workers, working overseas. It's the largest contributor to the economy of the Philippines. It brings in over $16 billion a year, while agriculture, which is the next largest industry, only brings in 6. So you can see that the Philippines has now oriented themselves towards producing workers for export. So, for example, there's a lot of training available for caregivers, live-in caregivers, for nurses, etc., and they are trained to the foreign standards where they're going. So for the U.S., they get training so that they meet the U.S. standard for nursing and can be accepted into nursing, or for live-in caregivers, which are in demand in Canada and lots of other places, etc. There's not much training anymore for the needs of the Filipino people. So even though a lot of Filipinos are involved in health care, there is very little health care delivered in the Philippines.
So those skills are all just leaving the country then?
Absolutely. And it's, you know, even the people that you talk to, they're supportive a little bit of this, because the families are so desperate that if they do not get an overseas foreign worker remitting money back to them, they cannot eat.
Well, you can see how you get into a vicious cycle like that.
Yeah, they estimated that each overseas foreign worker was supporting between 7 and 10 people at home.
What is Canada's involvement in the Philippines?
Well, Canada is involved in a couple of areas, and actually the motion that we passed at the VDLC got at some of that. For example, they provide aid to the Philippines, including military aid. And, the BC Committee for Human Rights in the Philippines has been asking that aid, any aid to the Philippines, be tied to improvements in the human rights situation. Secondly, Canada runs through CEDA, as you know, these partnership arrangements where grants are given to community organizations they would like those grants targeted to genuine community organizations that are struggling for democracy and improvement in the conditions in the Philippines. So that's the second thing. They were also looking to get the Canadian government at some level or somebody to do a task force or a public inquiry on the conditions of human rights in the Philippines, because basically everybody's closing their eyes to this. And it's hard to get a form somewhere. You know, it's like the Jakansky case at the airport. When it gets to a public hearing, you get to find out a lot about what is really happening. And that has not occurred for the human rights situation in the Philippines, and they're seeking some country that would be willing to try to undertake some investigation.
What do you think should happen with the live-in caregiver program?
I think live-in caregivers, it's a fine program in the sense that I can understand why workers, mostly women, by the way, come here for that. I just told you the conditions they face at home and et cetera. But when they arrive here, they're terribly abused. Because they're desperate, because they've got all these people relying on them, they tend to accept conditions that no worker should have to accept living in people's homes. And this applies to all temporary foreign workers that come to Canada. They don't have any orientation to what the rights are here, what the minimum wage is, what the working hours is, what your vacation entitlements are, and they're all exploited terribly. And this is totally unacceptable. If we are accepting workers from other countries as guests in our country to perform some necessary task, they need to be treated like that, like guests, and treated properly and given their full rights, and that's just not happening.
If there was one concrete thing that someone listening could do that would express solidarity, what would it be?
Well, we came back and we were so, you know, just, I guess, emotionally affected by that tour to the Philippines, we all were, that we resolved that we were going to do whatever we could to help them. And we came up with a two-pronged program. One is that we've got a project called Adopt an Organizer. And we love these organizers that are working over there. They're very dedicated. They've got a lot of women working as organizers and a lot of young people, both of which are tremendously good, you know, veins that's the focus of development of organization and organizers. So we would like to adopt some of these, and we're proposing five to unions and any other group that wants to take this on. We've got a couple adopted already. The commitment is $100 a month for 12 months. And in return, the organizer that you adopt will report back to you regularly on what they're doing. And that's an important part of it, too, because that's going to educate you about what the issues are and what is really going on in the Philippines. And we're glad to be doing that. We think that that's really going to help link Canadians to their counterparts in the Philippines. The second part is there's a thing called Balak buy-in boxes, which is there are a lot of people who are over here working or have family back, send goods back to the Philippines. And it's a pretty good setup because you get a box that's about 1.5 meters square, and you can fill it with whatever you want. The weight doesn't matter, and it travels by ship to the Philippines for $60. So we've already sent off one Balak buy-in box with a bunch of union stuff and office equipment and things, and we're asking our affiliates to help us send off these as regularly as possible to support these organizers in the Philippines.
So if somebody's listening right now, they should just contact the VDLC, and then that you will tell them how to get involved?
Yep, if they could, you know, it's as simple as just making a donation if you can't undertake the Adopt an Organizer program. It's a $1,200 commitment over a year, of course. But if you have useful goods, and we have a list, it includes medicines, patent medicines, school supplies and office supplies, things that are in high demand and useful there to people that are organizing. And there is tremendous resistance. That's the thing you got to understand. Even though the conditions are just awful, you know, extrajudicial killings, repression, and all that kind of thing, no resources to work with, there's incredible organizing going on in the Philippines. And, you know, we've met some incredible groups doing really important work. We saw the results of their success, so they're succeeding, and we think that they deserve support. And we need to link with them because, you know, we have a large Filipino community here. These are their concerns about what's going on in the home country, the abuse of democracy, the abuse of human rights. So I think we really need to link up with them. It's a common fight against globalization, and as we put on our poster, when they win, we win.
Well, thanks very much, Bill. It sounds like you've got some really great solidarity ideas there.
good. I hope that people will pay a little bit of attention and support them and educate themselves a bit about the Philippines, because it's an important place right now.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Bill Saunders. He's president of the Vancouver and District Labor Council, and he was part of a human rights solidarity tour that recently visited the Philippines.